Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The holiday season can be a deadly time of year on the roads, primarily due to an increase in drunk drivers shuttling to and from holiday celebrations. We are joined on this New Year's Eve particularly worrisome night by two troopers from the New York State Police Traffic Services Section. They're experts on highway safety and on what we can all do to keep the roads safe during the holidays and at any time of the year. Major Mark Hansen is the Director of Traffic Services for the New York State Police. He's been on the force for over 30 years and has previously served in five troops in traffic services. Technical Sergeant Doug Paquette is the Program Manager for Drug and Alcohol Training and Enforcement Programs and Underage Drinking Enforcement Efforts. He's been a member of the New York State Police for more than 25 years. Over the Christmas holiday, the New York State Police enforced the national initiative Drunk Driving Over the Limit Under Arrest to crack down on drunken driving. Are you worried about the roads tonight? Do you have a story to share or a question about how you can keep the roads safe? Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can just send us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, so the first question for you guys is, and we have one phone call, we'll take it in a minute, but in the meantime, I want to ask Doug Paquette, Sergeant, what is it? I'm riding down the road. You need to give me some advice. And I see somebody who is weaving around. I have a cell phone in my car. I'm not supposed to be using that cell phone, but I can report that person to you guys. Should I do it? That's a tough one, right?
Great way to start right off. Thank you. Well, if you have the plate number, you have the direction of travel, you can pull over where it's safe so you don't drive.
Yeah.
And then make the call then and say, listen, this is the car. Here's the plate number. I was following it for X amount of time. But that alone is... There's so many distractions going on for people when they drive vehicles anymore. They may be intoxicated. It may be something else. You don't know. But it is worth to make the call. But you got to stop and you got to make that call safely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Major, what is it that allows people? I mean, you got to be a bit of a psychologist in this job after a while. What is it that allows people to think that they can drink and drive?
Well, we don't know. We wish we could answer that question. Obviously, people are doing it. We're out there all the time trying to stop it. And I thank you for having us on so we could spread this message to the public this way also. But what allows them to do it? We don't allow them to do it. But unfortunately, there are some people that's still out there doing it. We still lose about 360 people or so a year in this state due to alcohol fatalities.
And let's face it, these people are potential killers.
Well, they are killers. Yeah. We tell our people every time you make a DWI arrest, you potentially saved a life. Because if that person continues on down the road, they have the potential to either kill themselves or somebody else.
It's really unbelievable. And we have been treated lately to some horrific stories about drunken people who get on the highway in the wrong side and who, do all this kind of thing. And think about this, if it's your child or your wife or your husband, this is a terrible thing. And I guess both of you guys have seen the results of this.
Absolutely. We talk about a lot of numbers in traffic safety arena, but it's not just numbers. It's real people. It's real lives. It's mothers, sisters, brothers, fathers. We talk about the ripple effect, what that does to a family when they lose a life that due to a traffic crash that could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm. And what, just for one second more, by the way, 1-800-348-2551, just for a second, if either of you could, when somebody gets into an accident as a drunken driver, you get them out of the car, what is it that they're most likely to say to you? They didn't mean it, or, I mean,
We've heard just about everything.
Yeah.
Especially at a crash scene, it depends. You could have people that are injured. The person driving could be injured. You may not even have a chance to talk to that person. But when we stop a person that you suspect of being under the influence. It starts off with observations and, you know, conversations, and then standard field sobriety tests. And based on our training, we make a determination.
And Sergeant, what is it that you guys do in terms of enforcing the law? Do you stop lines of traffic and look into into cars, or do you wait till somebody's driving erratically? How do you do it?
Well, there's multi facets that we would use. We use sobriety checkpoints.
Yeah.
Where we would literally stop every car and talk to the drivers briefly, maybe 15, 20 seconds as they pass through. We also have dedicated patrols where folks are out looking for driving clues that could possibly mean impairment. They would stop those vehicles and interview the drivers if they feel it's necessary, have them get out of the car, go through field sobriety tests, and then at the end of those sobriety tests, make the conclusion whether or not to arrest.
I have heard that some people try to beat the law by objecting to having the blood alcohol test. Is that permissible?
They can refuse the blood alcohol test or breath alcohol test, regardless, either one. But there's ramifications. They're going to lose their license as a result of it.
You mean if they refuse, they automatically basically...
Well, they're going to go to an administrative hearing, and then the decision will be made by an administrative court judge whether or not to take their license. It's a refusal. There's a separate process that we have to go through. But, yeah, there are repercussions for refusing.
Yeah. Okay, let's take one call. We have one. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield again, 1-800-348-2551. Kerry, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey.
First thing, I want to wish you and your guests a very happy New Year's.
And happy New Year to you.
I'm a retired police officer from Massachusetts, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, throughout my career, I effected, you know, hundreds of arrests for alcohol-related violations, and I've administered hundreds of sobriety tests. Now, my reason for this particular call is I always felt there was another angle to maybe combat OUIs or DWIs, however you want to identify it, and that would be to limit the number of drinks a person can order at the time he's purchasing the drinks, and that limit would be to 2 drinks. You know, in other words, you can purchase a drink for yourself, if you wish, for a girlfriend, your wife, another person, but put an end to the stuff of 5 guys in a sports bar and buying rounds for each other, and now there's 5 drinks a person. I've seen it happen many times. And
so you think a change in the law limiting the number of drinks a bartender could serve?
Exactly.
I'm for it. I doubt the bartenders will be
for it. Oh, well, that's it. You know, I brought this up to people in the political arena in Massachusetts, and they don't even want to touch it. And I think probably because a lot of their constituents are owners of a bar or they're liquor distributors. I mean, nobody wants to see a reduction in their profits, but too bad.
Well, too bad is right when you consider what the consequences can be. So I have a question based on what Kerry is telling us, Major and Sergeant. Do you ever target a bar? I mean, you know, if somebody's coming out of a bar, they're likely to be drunk, or more likely to be drunk than if they're not. Does anybody ever sit outside a bar and say, let's look and see what happens here?
We don't just sit on a bar looking for people that are leaving. You know, there are certain areas we'll look at where our data where we have alcohol-related crashes, and we'll target those areas that may be in the area where there are bars.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll look at those areas and we'll conduct our sobriety road checks in those areas, and we'll target those areas with our dedicated DWI enforcement. Because those are the areas that's what we're trying to stop. We're trying to stop those people from crashing and killing people.
Major, what's the open bottle law? I don't know what that is. I've heard about it.
An open container. You can't have an open container in your
of
vehicle.
Of any kind? Could you have a Pepsi open?
Open alcohol container.
Okay. Kerry, anything else? That's a good idea. I like it.
I just think that my particular way, you're sort of controlling it in a big way before the operator gets on the road.
Okay. Good for you, Kerry, and I thank you for your wonderful call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in West Shokan. Bill, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time to share some stories with us. Wanted to ask, my wife and I were following a weaving vehicle on the thruway a couple of months ago, and it was scary, really scary to watch. And we called the state police and continued following the vehicle for about 20 miles, and the state police kept telling us they were trying to get someone there, and ultimately they didn't, and we had to peel off. And so my question is this. Is there a budgetary restriction in terms of being able to respond to people who are calling in situations like that? And is it true that there's some difficulty in actually getting troopers to respond?
Well, that would depend on where, you know, that occurred, what the troopers are doing at that time. Obviously, we encourage people to make that call as soon as you see, you know, a vehicle weaving and get the best description as possible, direction of travel. When you're on the throughway like that, where what we call a line post, a trooper may have a post as long as 20 miles, and you know he could be at one end of that post and not be able to get to the other in time. But in most cases, we're able to get there in a timely manner and make
the
stop.
I mean, in this case, the guy actually even stopped at a rest stop, and we sat at the rest stop for 5 minutes and kept calling. And, you know, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I hope that there's actually people out there that are, you know, paying attention, because you try to be a good Samaritan, do the right thing, get someone off the road, and you'd like to think that the state police are responding. So
sure.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, and good luck to you guys. I know it's a difficult time of the year. Thanks a lot.
Bill, thank you very much. And I think Bill makes a very good case. Our troopers are heroes. In many cases, they make dangerous stops. They're by the side of the road. We just saw somebody dying. It is not an easy job, I think. And I want to congratulate you guys for what you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes from Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility offering exercise, nutrition, personal training, and weight loss programs. SaratogaHealthandWellness.com. Mario's True Value Home Center, Volusia, New York, open 7 days a week for building supplies, equipment rentals, and hardware needs, featuring Benmore paints and stains. Mario'sTrueValue.com. And Performance Automotive, Pittsfield, a European and Saab service center serving Western Massachusetts and the greater Albany market for 25 years. Saab, it's not just a car, it's a passion. SaabPerformance.com.
And we are back with Technical Sergeant Douglas Paquette of the New York State Troopers, and we are with the Major Martin C. Hansen, who is with us also to answer your calls. 1-800-348-2551. Anything you've ever wanted to know? Anything? If you've got an answer, we had one very smart caller saying, tell the bartenders to limit the number of drinks. Now there are ways around. You go to another bar, you can have something in the car. But, you know, everything that you do, it seems to me, is positive. And when you think of the dire consequences that come out of this stuff, well, okay, let's go to Tom in Catskill. Tom, you're on.
Yeah. I still don't understand the logic behind putting up a roadblock and stopping everybody, rather than staking out the venues and pulling over people that you really have a good basis for expecting to be driving while intoxicated.
Okay, good question. Major?
Well, I mean, as far as our road checks, it's a lot of publicity also that shows that we are out there, and it's a deterrent. You know,
sure.
you see a troop car or a police car in your area. It's a deterrent. You see a road check up. It deters people from drinking and driving. They're going to be thinking about that. They're going to be thinking, you know, is there going to be another one next week?
Yeah.
And anytime we can get that message out, it's worthwhile to do it.
Sergeant.
Well, not only is the checkpoint set up, but folks who are trying to avoid the checkpoint use alternate routes. That's where the dedicated patrols come in. There are other troopers or local officers, if it's a combined checkpoint, that are working in the other areas around that checkpoint, looking for those people who are trying to sneak by us.
Which is an interesting question. Has it ever happened that either of you guys, who are pros and have been at it for quite a while, have you ever been in a checkpoint when you saw some headlights coming down the road, they see you and they turn around?
Absolutely,
yes.
Let's go to Steve in Willow, Massachusetts. Okay, Steve, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Steve, Ludlow, Mass.
Yeah, great to hear from you, Steve.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to say that here in Massachusetts, we have one of the strictest states that penalizes, you know, the act of drinking and driving. I got popped a while back, 4 years back, and one of the things that I learned in my lesson, being a college student working two part-time jobs, is it hurts. It hurts financially. It makes major life changes to what you want to do, how you want to live your life. You're not going to be able to do it. But one of the other things that they focus on is making the family and friends part of your suffering with you. I mean, because you can't get to a courthouse, you can't get to work, you can't get to your appointments, you can't go grocery shopping because you don't have a car, and you need to rely on all these other people. So here in Mass, they make your family and your friends suffer right along with you. So my circle of friends, my family, have a bitter taste when it comes to driving, drinking, and driving laws. I was driving for a long time, got popped. It was only going to be a matter of time for me, but I learned my lesson, and people need to realize that it's more than one night. This is going to last for the rest of your life.
And how do you handle it now? In other words, what do you do now to make sure that it doesn't happen again?
What do I do now is I'm a lot more conscious about myself. I was a reckless teen back in those days. I just had a lot to learn about life, and this was one of those wake-up calls for me because, you know, having a $12,000 fine slapped in my face and I make only $20,000 a year, that's half my income that I have to pay, that really hurt. And I'm still to this day, I'm still paying for that. I'm 31 years old now, and I still think about that decision that I made that one horrible night, and I blew the legal limit. And I still, that was enough. That was enough for me.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call. I think it's probably more helpful than anything else you could have done today, and I appreciate it very much.
Yes,
and,
thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy holidays.
It's a good thing that you're here to talk about it, because it could have been a lot worse. And just think of the impact it would have had on your family, if you would have been killed or hurt somebody else.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for the great call. Appreciate it very much. Very courageous.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Okay, let's go to, CJ. All right, CJ, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to wish a happy new year to both troopers, to Trooper Doug and Major Hansen, and give my thanks for the protection that the troopers offer us daily. Their life is on the line at all times, and I just want to offer my prayers continually for all troopers and policemen that have to face the awful things they do day to day, and we give you very much thanks.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the holidays.
Very, very nice.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, CJ. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. There's one free phone ready to go. There's something that bothers me, guys. Maybe this is not a fair question to ask, but I hate these cars which have blacked out windows, because how can you see in the windows? A guy could be sitting there with a gun. What do you do?
Yeah, we don't like them either, and many of them are illegal, depending on the amount of tinting on the window.
Is there a New York State law on this? Do you know?
There is, yes.
But there are some states which have no such law, right?
I believe there may be.
The southern states are a little more lenient as far as how dark the tinting can be.
Right. Okay, let's go to John in Pittsfield. Okay, John, you're on. Hi, John.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me. Sure. I just had a quick question for the troopers about the open container law. If you had, like, for instance, an open hard liquor bottle in the trunk or something, how are you supposed to transport a bottle like that that's already opened?
So what does the word open mean in this case? There can be a cap on it, but that's still considered open?
No. If it's capped, it's not open. We're talking about an open container that you can readily drink out of.
Yeah. You know, if it's sealed up in the trunk of your car, you don't have ready access to it. That's not what we're concerned about. We're concerned about the folks that have the open Budweiser there or the Miller, whatever it happens to be, right in the console, and they're drinking as they go down the road.
All right, great. Thank
John,
you.
Thanks for the call. Yep. Okay, let's go to Ricky in Great Barrington. Okay, Ricky, you're on.
Oh, hi. I wanted to also second the person that called before the last person and thank the troopers for their service. Besides that, I have also another question about the open container law, which is that some restaurants, you order a bottle of wine, you don't finish it, and they have to go through some process to close it before you can take it home.
That is correct. The stopper goes back in. There's a seal they put on it. They have a special bag they put it in.
Really?
And send it out to you, yes.
But mm-hmm. if you put it in the trunk of your car, can you just put a bottle from home that's got the cork back in it in the trunk and you'll be fine?
Well, we won't be looking in the trunk of your car unless you give us some other reasons to search the car. So if it's in there with the rest of your luggage, we're probably not even going to know about it. It's you know, we're more concerned with okay. the open container, whether it's a bottle or a can or a cup there in the car where you're driving, that you could possibly be drinking out of it while you're driving the car.
How about drugs? You know, you're a specialist in that, Sergeant. I know that. If you smell pot, for example, mm-hmm. in a car, mm-hmm. what are you likely to do?
The whole enforcement process there's really three phases to it. The car, why did we stop the car? What was the reason?
Yeah, right.
The second piece is face-to-face contact. I come up to the car, I'm talking to you. Obviously, there's this odor of marijuana coming out of the car. But the odor alone, yes, it's a good clue, but it's not the total. I mean, can you answer my questions? Can you follow my questions? Are your pupils dilated? Is there reddening of the white of the eye? Are there other indicators to say to me, I need to investigate this a little further. Let me get you out of the car and do some field sobriety tests. It's just another piece to the puzzle to help me build my probable cause to get you out and go further with the investigation.
So is the field sobriety test applicable to drugs?
They show intoxication. And for drugs, it's impairment. And impairment's a lesser included in intoxication. So if you fail the sobriety test, you're impaired. And the way the law is written, it's impaired for drugs. So, yes, it would be included in that.
Okay, well,
thanks. Alan, yeah. Why did you ask that question when I called in?
Huh?
That's what I'd like to
know. No, it had nothing to do with you. It just frankly popped into my head.
Okay, I have another question,
right.
too, if I might. I think it's like two beers and two mixed drinks, but first of all, what are the numbers? And how long do you have to be not drinking before it's okay to get in the car?
It depends. That's the top line. What the general rule is, or the acceptance is, that 5 ounces of wine, ounce and a quarter of 80 proof distilled beverage, and a 12-ounce can of beer all have the same alcohol potency. And we know that mathematically each drink is about a 0.02 per drink per hour.
So what does 5 ounces of wine look like? Is that a glass of wine?
It's what you would normally be served at most restaurants would serve if you went out to dinner.
Well, as a non-drinker, I can tell you one thing. On the rare occasion where I've had one glass of wine, I have issues. So,
and most people metabolize about one drink per hour.
Yeah.
So, and it depends. What's your size, weight-wise? What do you have in your stomach? Is your stomach full? Is it empty? If you're drinking a mixed drink where there's two or three different types of distilled beverage in that drink, it's going to have greater kick than if you just had a beer. So it really depends. And the rule is that for every drink you've had, it takes about 1 hour for that drink to be eliminated from your body.
Huh. So if you guys arrest somebody who, or if you stop somebody who is clearly under the influence, what do you do? Do you take them into the station? What do you do?
Yeah, well, like Sergeant Paquette said, we'll do the standard field sobriety test at the scene to get your probable cause to indicate intoxication, and then you bring them back to the station for processing. And at that point, we'll administer a breathalyzer, which would
Can you breathalyze on the road?
We have some trailers that equipped with that, but most of ours are done back at the station.
Mm-hmm. So that gives them a little extra time to wear it off.
Yeah, and what happens to your car, to the person's car? Yeah.
Depends on where it is. And, we can leave it in a safe place, it will be left there. If not, we'll have it towed or move it to a safe place.
Okay. All right. Wow. Hey, Ricky.
Thank you.
Good call. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Jim in Mechanicville. Jim, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Thanks, Alan.
Sure.
To everything in life, there's usually a law of unintended consequences,
mm-hmm.
and that is exactly what there is with the open container law. The unintended consequences are that there is a huge amount of litter on the road in the form of alcoholic beverage containers, and I know this because I basically walk daily down the road in my neighborhood. and I'm always seeing just lots and lots of empty beer cans, far out of proportion to probably what people actually consume in the car. And, you know, the obvious answer is that these are the containers of the drink and drive crowd, who know that if they're found with an open container of beer, that they could be arrested. So what do you do with it? Well, you just chuck it out the window.
All right, let's get a reaction. The sergeant or major?
Sergeant? I mean, there's no way to tell. People will park in different areas and party in there and leave their empties behind versus taking them with them. There's a variety of reasons why they pitch the trash out the window.
A lot of times we'll stop people and they have a bunch of empty cans in the vehicle. Although they're intoxicated, that's why we're stopping them. They haven't been littering.
Right. Oh, well, I guess my point is that most people understand or know what the open container law is all about. So if they do in fact have a beer in their lap while they're driving, they know that the best way to deal with that from your point of view is to dispose of the evidence.
So, well, okay, Jim Allen here. What would the other side be? Don't have the open container law?
Well, I'm just pointing out that there is the law of unintended consequences, and
sure.
And those are things that maybe while the laws may have had good intentions, there's always that other side that pops up after the law has been put in place that says, "Whoops, we didn't see that."
Yeah, but what are the alternatives? Is my question.
I'm not sure, but just my own personal perspective is that you also have to look at the unintended consequences of any particular law or regulation, because sometimes you can't foresee what they are.
Okay.
And this is one that I think is actually a pretty significant problem, because the vast amount of beverage containers that you see disposed of out there along the roads are empty beer cans.
Okay. Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay,
let's go to... Let's go to Roy in Starlight, Pennsylvania. Okay, Roy, you're on.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you all for your service. You too, Alan.
Thank you.
And, I'm one of those guys that walks down the road with a plastic bag and picks up all that stuff. But I'm a retired New York Daily News photographer for 22 years, and I've seen many, 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 many dead people from drinking and driving, and alcohol makes really good people do stupid things. And I just would like to give a little advice to your listeners. If you're going to drink or smoke pot, stay home. That's the best advice I could give you. Remember, it's amateur night.
Roy, let me ask you a question. Do you think, because I'm not going to ask the troopers this, because I suspect it's a policy question they won't answer, but they might. Do you think our laws are rough enough on people who are drunk drivers?
You can make all the laws in the world. People are going to break them. There's no doubt about it. It's against the law to kill people, but we're killing more people now than we ever have.
Yeah, but you kill somebody with a gun, and you get life in prison.
More people get killed by tobacco than any other thing, and we don't do a thing about it. So let's get real.
Sure, well, that's your answer.
Well,
not mine, but that's your answer.
That's one of them.
Okay. Hey, Roy, good call. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for what you do, Alan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Megan in Slingerlands. Okay, Megan.
Hi.
Megan, right?
It's Megan.
Megan, yeah.
I have a personal interest in this topic. My beloved father was someone who wore the gray uniform with great pride for 20 years in the Adirondacks. I know firsthand what cost there is for those men and women who bravely and courageously police our highways. And I just can't say enough about how much we owe them our appreciation and our caution when we're driving when they pull somebody over. There have just been too many policemen killed in the line of duty. And I implore everyone tonight to have a good time. Ring in the new year, but do it responsibly.
Hmm.
And, Alan, I really appreciate that you're doing this today. And I hope you'll do it 3 more times this year.
That's why we're doing it today, and we thank you so much, Megan, for your
Super Bowl.
Your wonderful call. Yeah, Super
Bowl. Of my patients, who was 22 years old, was killed at 5 a.m. by a guy who had had 19 drinks in two bars on New Scotland Avenue, leaving a two-year-old. And I think people don't think it through.
Either you guys want to comment on that?
Well, thank you, Megan. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I love you guys.
Thank you.
And I pray for you all the time.
Thank you.
And thank you again. I can't say it with more deep conviction.
Thank you, Megan. Okay, appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Alan, thank you for doing it.
You're welcome, dear. Okay. Let's go to Ellen in Sand Lake. Okay, Ellen. Ellen, I tell you what, I need a favor. Could you hold on for a minute?
Of course.
We'll just put you on hold for a second, and we'll be right back, but we have to take a short break. Just a couple of seconds. Thanks.
Support for WAMC goes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting River of Gold, pre-Columbian treasures from Sitio Conti, gold work from an ancient American society in central Panama. smith.edu/artmuseum for info. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, qfcc.com. And the Blue Rock Restaurant, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Chef Chris Ramirez creating new American cuisine and handcrafted desserts. Wine and beer from local to worldwide. Live Jazz Fridays, theBlueRockRestaurant.com.
Well, thank you all for these wonderful calls. I'm just so taken with them. Let's go. We're with Joe right now. Right, Joe? You there?
No, this is Helen.
Helen, okay. Ellen, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
That's
Ellen.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for having the program, and thanks to the troopers for being there. This is wonderful. It gives me a chance to ask a question I've been wanting to ask for a couple of years now, and that is about the attorneys group who advertises pretty heavily in this area about how they'll they give the impression that they're going to get everybody off, and that the troopers are always wrong. And that the driver who is driving drunk is always right. And it's driving me crazy. Could they comment on that, please?
Sure.
Well, that's a lot of work. That's how they advertise. You could really talk about any product and talk about their advertising. But
yeah.
that's the way they advertise, and that's how they get their business.
Mm. Until they get their business. That doesn't make it right. It just means that's what they do.
Yeah.
You're very kind.
I was thinking while I was waiting, I sort of had some enlightenment, and that was that, of course, they have to advertise as if they're always right, and the person who's driving is always wrong. That's what they have to do in order to get the business. But then there's another ad that counters that I'm fascinated by and very happy with from a national organization and a federal government, I think. About you see what's not out there now, that's my car because I had to sell my car in order to pay off the attorney. And I think, good for these people. So anyway, that's my thinking.
Ellen, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Okay, thanks, Ellen. Okay. Bye.
All right, and let's go to, is this where we want to go? Okay, because they're in order, right? Let's go to Joe in Coxsackie. Okay, Joe, you're on.
Hi, my comment is, my understanding of statistics is that talking on our cell phone while driving is the same statistics as having three drinks of alcohol in your body. You know, whether you're hand-holding it or not, you're so distracted. And I know from personal experience, I've missed my exits when I'm talking on the cell phone. So I'd like to comment on that.
Well, certainly any type of distraction, anything that takes you away from operating a vehicle is not good. Operating a vehicle in and of itself is multitasking. Once you start doing other things within that vehicle, whether it's a cell phone or eating or smoking or putting on makeup or just talking to your passengers, it's a recipe for disaster.
I see that the rest stops say texting stop. Is that because it's so dangerous? And we've just created, I've heard Governor Cuomo coming on and talking about how, there's a huge fine and response to texting while driving.
Sure, that's one of Governor Cuomo's initiations was to put up the texting stops throughout the state. Every time somebody sees that sign, it's another message
sure.
that you shouldn't
Don't
be
do
doing
it.
That. Sure.
Don't do it. Yeah. Sergeant, did you have something on that?
Well, if someone's speaking on the cell phone and they hang up the phone, then their attention is back on the highway. If you're intoxicated, there is no pause. There is no break in that. You are intoxicated and impaired the whole route that you're driving.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Joe, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks again. We'll go to Kate in Hudson. Okay, Kate, you're on.
Hi. I've been listening, and I've heard a lot of people ask about open containers in cars. And, you know, the answers have been, oh, we're not looking, you know, if they're out of your reach. The answers have been, oh, we're not looking for that. You know, we have no reason to go in the trunk. But I actually want to know, is it illegal to have a bottle that's recorked inside your car? And if you feel as if, you know, the officer is sort of taking a license with that, how do you protect yourself?
Anyone? Now, these are troopers, not lawyers, but yeah, go ahead.
Right, but they enforce the law. So
indeed, sure they do, Kate.
Every situation is different, and every situation is handled on an individual basis. And if your beverage is recorked and it's put away, you're keeping with, but we have no control over individuals as to what they do. We just know what the law is, and we're looking for that open container. And again, every situation is different. I can't sit here and give you a better answer than that.
Okay, Kate.
So,
yeah.
So is it, I'm still, is it illegal or is it, I mean, is it illegal or is it legal to have a recorked bottle in your car?
You can have that bottle, it's resealed, it's not, the rule is, it's an open container. Are you talking inside the passenger compartment or in the trunk?
She said the trunk.
The trunk, but I'm really talking either. I mean, I just want to know because, you know, it gets slippery to say it's an individual basis because...
We're looking for that open container for which you can drink from in the car within easy reach. That's what we're looking
okay,
for.
Okay, I think that's a good answer, Kate, and I thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to Russ in Waterford. Okay, Russ, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I have a question and actually a comment. My question is, a lot of times when you watch the news after these checkpoints are put in place, it seems like not only are there a number of drunk driving arrests, but it seems like there's hundreds of traffic tickets written, traffic infractions like bad registration or inspection, and I wanted to know if that's actually true, if these guys are writing other tickets or focusing on DWI.
Well, both. We're focusing on DWI, but certainly if there are other violations that are observed, they can be written tickets.
So if you have if you see somebody with a tread off on a tire,
sure,
you can certainly say this is unsafe and we want to protect you.
Sure. Or, you know, registrations, inspections, stickers, you know, we're for the sobriety road checks, that's basically what we're looking for the DWI arrest.
But there
are other tickets that are written at those road
checks.
Well,
I mean, primarily you might hear about 8 people arrested for DWI and 410 tickets written for traffic infractions. That's why I thought it was to be quite honest with you, I thought maybe it was an opportunity to do both. You have somebody stop.
It is. Those numbers are very high for one road check, but we do both. That's correct.
And, Russ, have you ever gone through the thruway toll gates and then you have a trooper looking down at your tires? I mean, it happens all the time.
Sure.
Well, not only that, they drive by with those black boxes on their trunk, and they do pretty much the same thing, too, I would imagine, right? Registration readers. And actually, my comment was, you know, given it's a holiday season and gift cards have become so popular, I really think that their local cab companies should offer gift cards. Because what better gift to give somebody than to somebody you think might do something stupid or might do something that's against your better judgment than to give them a gift card for a cab, and then they don't have to spend any money at all. They just have to call the number and use the gift card and get home safe. I always thought that would be a great idea, but I've never seen it put into action.
Sure. There are many of those programs throughout the state. You'll see taxi and cab companies advertise that also throughout the state. And there are even some beer distributors that will advertise that they'll pay for your ride.
And and parents who tell their children, no questions asked, give me a call and I'll pick you up and take you.
I'm one of those parents. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Okay. 1-800-348-2551, but these phones are pretty well filled up. Let's go to Bill in New York. Okay, Bill.
Hello, first-time caller, long-time listener. I want to say God bless the police tonight. There are folks out there that do appreciate you so much for what you do. I do have a quick question, but I want you to know where I'm coming from. I'm almost 50 years old, and I can remember clearly when I was in fourth grade, and my grandma got the call that my uncle was hit by a drunk driver walking across a road, and his body was thrown over 400 feet, and my aunt lost an eye to a drunk driver. I have never drunk and drive. I try to let my in-laws know that. I'm an only child, and they look at me and my wife like a joke because we won't do it. And how do I get through to them, you know, without being cast out of the family, that it is just so wrong and it can destroy not only their lives but other people's lives too?
Absolutely, Bill. That's just like I spoke about earlier, that ripple effect. You know, it affects a lot of people, family members, a lot of people in your lives. And I commend you for what you do, and you just keep doing the right thing and keep trying to send that message of not drinking and driving.
Sometimes, once in a great while, I think over the years, two of them have been in trouble for doing it. And both of them, one had a passenger that had a serious injury, punctured lung and such, and he came out fine, of course, because he was drunk. And the other one was in an accident that killed his best friend.
Oh my God.
And he was driving. And but they still do it. It's just unbelievable. I don't understand. How do you get through to people like that?
That's what alcoholism can be, by the way. I mean, there are some people who just can't stop. The Bill, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Okay. Well, let's go to Ellen in Ellenville. Hi, Ellen.
Hello.
Hey, Ellen. Go ahead.
Yes. I have always tried to get the two trooper to a car, regardless of what the shift is. In other words, you know, whether it's the day or the middle shift or the late night shift, I feel that New York State can afford to have two troopers in a car. And I feel it is vastly terrible thing to only put one trooper in a car.
Okay, Ellen, only because there's so many people behind you. We get the basic premise. Do you guys want to say anything about this?
Well, there is a cost associated with that.
Sure.
You're talking about twice as many troopers.
Correct.
We do, by contract, have to ride double from midnight to 5 a.m.
Oh, is that right?
And you'll also see, especially this time of year, we have recruits who just came out of the academy, and they're being trained, field training, and you'll see two in a car, if they're being trained right now.
But, right.
But for the most part, we do ride alone.
Well, I want you to know there is a large amount of the public that feels there should be two troopers at all times for the troopers' protection.
Ellen, you've made the point, and we really appreciate the call. It's just that we want to keep moving on.
Right.
Thanks very
much. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Okay, let's go to Eileen in Saugerties. Eileen, you're on.
Oh, hi. Since I do often see people talking on cell phones in cars when they're driving, and I know that state troopers can't be everywhere at once, I wondered how hard is it for you guys generally to catch people talking? I mean, if they're holding a cell phone to their ear, it's pretty obvious. But if they're texting where they're kind of glancing down, holding the thing in their lap or whatever, it must be so tricky for you to catch them.
It is tougher to see sometimes with their texting, and you can't see the phone. One of the reasons this is part of this enforcement campaign that we use our unmarked SUVs. It puts us up a little bit higher.
Oh,
we
good.
Do have other vehicles that we use that are unmarked, where we have a better vantage point to see that. Mm-hmm. But you know, for the most part, there are a lot of people out there. You know, we could pull up alongside them with a marked unit, and many times they don't even see us.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know that, because I feel bad that so many people seem to get away with it, and I figured it must be tough for you guys to catch them.
Yeah, well, it is, and a lot of people do get away with it, and you know, we're trying to change that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
a lot. Yep. Okay. And on to Terry in Albany. Terry in Albany, you're on.
Hey, I was actually just curious, with all the talk about marijuana maybe being legalized, if the state police were maybe getting ready for, you know, getting ready for traffic stops in that sense more than normal, I guess. I don't know if it's already pretty common anyways, but.
We look for impaired driving, whether it's impaired by drugs or impaired by alcohol.
Mm.
And our process is going to be the same right straight through to show impairment. Field sobriety tests, reason to stop the car, interview of the driver, the sobriety test, under arrest, and we take it from there. We have officers, troopers trained as drug recognition experts who are specially trained to do an evaluation to determine what other than alcohol may be causing the impairment. And so if for some reason alcohol is not the primary cause, we can look further. But we are well set to deal with impaired driving, whatever is thrown
even
at us.
Even though the marijuana may be legal, the impairment is not.
Well, and that's the same as if you had prescription meds on,
yeah, sure,
on board. You can have your prescription meds, and that's great. But many people sometimes overdo it, and as a result, they're impaired on the highway, and they're going to get processed the same as if it was they were taking heroin or something else.
Interesting. Terry, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Suzanne in Dutchess County. Suzanne, you're on. We're running out of time here.
Oh, hi. Well, I just thought that, you know, you hear of young people being stopped where the driver perhaps, you know, in a stop like this, not where you had some other reason to stop them, but in a, you know, precautionary stop. And the driver apparently has everything, well, his papers, and has not been a sign of drinking. But there are a couple of kids in the back seat, and I don't mean kids under 18, but that are, you know, maybe you even ask them, have they been drinking? And they have those little nip bottles or they have been drinking in the car, or they have an open container in the car, or maybe they have a mixed drink in a Pepsi bottle. Where does the open container law, you know, I mean, do you then ask them to get out? Or, I mean, is that okay for the people in the back seat to be drinking? And then I know now that I'm in my 60s, I certainly know plenty of people in their 40s and so forth, because nobody my age would do this, stop on their way home from work, grown-ups with families, and stop on their way home from work and pick up a couple of those little, I'd like to give you on the airplane. And they'll drink those. I mean, to me, that's like, I don't know. I guess it's the same as having a beer.
Okay, go. Oh, we're running out of time here,
anyway,
Terry.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes, we do.
Is there any accountability for those?
We get it. Major answer? Is it illegal for the people
illegal
in the back
for
seat?
Anybody in the vehicle to have
an open container.
Alcohol.
Okay, that answers that. Terrific. Sarge?
And if they're under 21, then we're going to look to see where they got it and who sold it to them so that we can take the investigation to the next level.
Thank you, Terry. Okay, let's see. We have time for one more. Suzanne from Dutchess County. Whoops, wrong. That's not happening. And Lou from Altamont. Lou from Altamont, go ahead. Whoop, Lou from Altamont isn't with us anymore. Let's go to Trudy from Saugerties. Trudy, can you put it in a sentence?
Yes, I can. Driving on the thruway, the northway particularly, when it's raining heavily and the cars are driving without lights on, is there any way you can enforce the lights being on?
Well, it is against the law, and we do enforce it.
Yeah.
But I see so much of it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We'll have to work harder at that one.
I wish you would.
Thank you, Trudy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are basically out of time. I really want to give a tremendous thank you for Martin C. Hansen, who's a major in the New York State Police, and Douglas Paquette, technical sergeant, traffic services, drug and alcohol, for being with us. You guys were terrific. I do feel that you have shown your department to be very concerned with this, and we appreciate it. Do you have any last things to say other than don't do it?
You hit it right on the head. It's if you're going to go out and have alcoholic beverages and have a good time and all, that's fine. Just do not get behind the wheel and drive the car. Plan ahead. Get a ride. Get a designated driver. You know, if it's at some place where you can spend the night. But don't drive the car.
Major Marty?
I'd just like to wish everybody a happy and safe holiday and drive safe.
Okay, we're out of time. I'm so sorry to anybody we may have left on the line. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald, financial advisor, and Joseph Steininger, CFP, financial advisor, thebeachwoodgroup.com. Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments. SubsidiumTech.com and Casual Set, Stuyvesant Plaza, featuring modern women's fashion selection and personal service. Serving the Capital Region for over 40 years, 518-482-7136. Again, everybody, thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/voxpop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Tom Jobe handled our social media. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. And if he didn't have enough to do, Ian Pickus answered the phone. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.